Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, toughmantri.com, by VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shop, by Polar, blood, sweat, and data. By premiumplus-sports.com, official travel agency of Babbittville.com. By USA-swimrun.com. If you haven't tried a swim run event, grab a buddy and give one a try. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We've been around 25 years. We've now raised over $100 million, sent out over 23,000 grants to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out at challengedathletes.org. Also, this is Babbittville.com. Endurance lives here. Our next guest, the creator, the founder, all things Spartan, Mr. Joe DeSena. Joe, how the heck you doing?
Good. How you doing?
I
just got back from a crazy trip. Sorry I missed you last week.
Not a problem. Wait, it's the last 10 days have been pretty nuts, right?
Pretty nuts. I did 8 countries in 9 days. Yeah.
It just was going to existing Spartan races, growing the series. What were you doing?
Well, I had to hit Iceland because we had the world championship, which I'd love to talk to you about, the Ultra World Championship.
With $1 million on the line.
With $1 million on the line. I was sweating. And then
yeah.
And I'll tell you that story.
Okay.
And then I had to go to Malaysia. We had a race there. I had to go for meetings in Hong Kong and Singapore and Japan and just the normal craziness of, hey, you know what? You want to be in 41 countries, this is what happens, right?
Exactly. So talk a little bit about when you put out this $1 million challenge, right? And basically somebody had to go and win 3 amazing events to get there. And the championship in Iceland, yeah, they had to do over 100 miles, right? They couldn't just win the thing. They had to get over 100 miles to get the $1 million prize. When you first came up with this, did you think that it's even possible?
I thought I was with one of our elite female athletes in New York. We were doing a thing for Fox and Friends. And it was leading into our Beast Championship in Tahoe. For those of you listening, we have different distance world championships.
Yep.
So not unlike Ironman or running. And this elite female athlete, Faye Stenning is her name, was telling me how she ate pizza the night before. And we were like 5 days away from this championship, and she was favored to win for female. And I thought, why are you eating pizza? And she said, well, it's cheap. And I thought, this is unbelievable. These are the fittest human beings in the world. Like, and I don't say that lightly because unlike some other sports, you've got to be strong, you've got to be fast, you've got to have endurance. Like, it's a pretty rare breed of athlete to do this, right? Like
right.
Upper body.
Well, yep.
Like, I know run, bike, swim is pretty holistic, but this takes it 5 levels up. And she's eating pizza? And so I said to myself, I'm going to throw out something crazy. I'm going to throw out $1 million purse, and maybe that'll attract the sponsors for these athletes, right? And the chance of somebody being able to do, certainly a female, being able to win both races and then do the 100 miles, and not to take anything away from females against men, it would just be harder for a female to get the 100 miles in based on, 18 years of statistics on these races.
Sure.
A female is usually doing about 20% less distance in the same amount of time, which is fine because I have an answer to that too. But long shot, but you know what? $1 million should be a long shot. Like if I gave $1 million away every year, we'd be out of business pretty quickly. but it should be one of those things that people are chasing after. Right. And I don't know, maybe 5% chance, 10% chance. Anyway, John Albin.
Yep, from England. Yeah.
From England. He wins the first race. And I was planning on having insurance for this $1 million.
That was my next question. Did you insure? Because like when people do when they do a free throw, the shot from the half court or whatever, everybody gets insurance on that stuff.
Well, so I had insurance for the 100. Prior to offering the $1 million, we offered $100,000 for 100 miles. And I had insurance for that, and it was affordable. And so I said to myself, if the insurance company is insuring the 100 miles, surely they're going to insure the $1 million at a higher premium because the same formula would apply.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But when they saw how fast Albin ran Tahoe, the first championship in the series of chasing the million, the premium became so ridiculous, I just couldn't do it. So we decided to self-insure.
Wow.
And then Albin goes to Sparta, Greece, which, by the way, was un-friggin' believable.
Was that the first time you've been back basically to Sparta?
We had gone last year, but it was kind of under the radar because we didn't want to make big fanfare and then trip up.
Right.
So we put on the event more of a beta test. It did very well. But this year was unbelievable. Next year, I'm not saying this lightly. It will give Kona a run for the money. This race, you have to come to this race.
I would love to come to this race. It sounds cool. What time of year?
It's November next year. Put it on your calendar.
Okay.
You're coming. You're staying with me, and it's unbelievable. So Sparta happens. Albin loses the first of three races that weekend. I'm starting to realize that maybe I'm okay.
Yeah.
And then he wins the other two, and he takes the weekend.
Oh my God!
So now there's a chance this guy's actually going to do it. And if anybody's going to run 100 miles, this guy's a friggin' mountain goat. He's going to do it. So I'm sweating. I'm getting phone calls from the board, the investors, right?
Yeah.
And so I talk to Albin, and he's in good spirits. He's like, I don't know if I could do it. I'm exhausted. I've been doing all these races. And we had a great chat, great guy, and he's going for it.
Oh, yeah.
But he starts to get picked up in the press, as you can imagine.
Oh, yeah, $1 million.
Big deal. And in the press, he starts to make statements about, look, if he sees quickly that the $1 million is out of reach, which would mean the additional $100,000 is also out of reach, that he's just going to quit. But anyway, fast forward.
Yeah.
And a gentleman named Ryan Atkins shows up. And he's going to give John a run for the money. He's not in the running for the million, but he's in the running for the 100 grand. And I see them go through one lap. I see them go through two laps. And I'm talking to Ryan's coach. And Ryan is like a beast as well, okay? There's five or six men in the field globally that could actually do this. And Ryan is one of them. And so and John is one of them. And so I'm talking to their coach, and their coach is basically saying to me, or Ryan's coach is saying, 90 is definitely possible. 100 is going to be a stretch, but as long as they maintain this pace, and he's got the math, and he almost looks like the cat that ate the canary, this coach. Like this is going to happen. And so I thought to myself, what's a good outcome? A good outcome is if John wins and gets the million, it's good for the sport. It's bad for me. But it's good for the sport.
Yeah.
A good outcome is if they get close to the 100, that's a good outcome. Great for me. Good for the sport. A bad outcome would be they don't get the million. It's good for me. But they don't get close. They quit. Because then there's no young person out there that's chasing this in the future.
Right.
And so anyway, I decide on the fly to offer John an alternative. He's three or four laps in. And I say, listen, if you want, if you're not feeling it, I'll give you 50 grand for 90.
Oh.
Right? Which is, you know, some people out there, obviously the folks get upset on Facebook, oh, you're changing the deal. And that's not what I was doing. What I was doing was I was saying, if you feel it at the halfway mark, I even gave him to the halfway mark, that you're not going to make it, you can go for the 90. Because my thinking was better for the sport. If he gets to 90, 92, right, somewhere in there, because then it's in reach.
Right. Yep.
Right?
Absolutely.
And to my surprise, so I go to dinner, and I come back, and we're, I don't know, 9 or 10 hours in, and John decided to drop. He's in great spirits. He's an awesome guy, but he decided to drop. And I say on the spot, John, 2 million. get back in there because it's kind of like the Stockholm syndrome where you start to like your captor. You know, a hostage starts to like their captor.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, I obviously didn't want to write the check, but on the other hand, I wanted to see this guy do it.
Right.
And he had already made up his mind, so he had tapped out. But Atkins, the second play, he was going for it. He was still going for it, and Atkins got really close to 90 miles. He had enough time to do 90 miles, but he decided to bag it in the mid 80s, and it was such a great effort. You know, he won $6,000 for winning. I threw him an extra $10,000 just because he was awesome.
He created great theater. I mean, that's the key, is you got to get close. I mean, when we first got hand cycles into Ironman, our guys couldn't make the bike. They couldn't make that bike cutoff time. And finally, what Ironman did when John McClain, I think it was 96, he missed the bike cutoff time. But they told him, go off and do the marathon so we know someone could do this thing. Right. And so he did. And they gave him a medal, and, you know, he couldn't keep the medal. He came back and broke all the cutoff times the following year. So this is the same thing. You got a guy who's now in the mid 80s. He knows he can get mid 90s. You get mid 90s, you can get there.
You get there. And so anyway, there's a bunch of folks obviously on Facebook that were misinterpreting what I think if they listened to this interview, they would understand what it takes in sport, because we want that young person.
Yes.
That's watching this go down, that says 4 years from now, I'm getting that $1 million.
Well, and once they know they can potentially make a living in the sport, it changes, right? It changed when they first put 100K in the Ironman in 86, and people were like, wait a second, I can actually make a living doing this.
I got a big idea for next year. What I'm going to do is set up a point system, and a perfect score could earn you the million. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a handicap for a female perfect score.
Yep.
So she could win the million. And then if they both get perfect scores, male and female, they just share it.
That makes sense.
And I'll pay down a bunch of places. So as you said, people could make a living and really chase this three championship series. So I'm pumped about it.
Well, what's fascinating to me, because think about it, when you first started this thing, I mean, it all came out of your death race that you were doing on your property where people were fixing fences and being out there for days and days. How many Spartan events are there now? Not including the cross country series, but just the trail series, just Spartan events.
Spartan events, there's 275 events in 41 countries.
I mean, when you started this thing, the last thing you're thinking about is how are the pros going to make a living doing this sport? You're thinking about, can I put one of these things on and not have to mortgage my house?
Oh, no doubt about it. It was not, there was a guy named Robert Coble, who I just have to give a shout out to, who managed a Tour de France team in his previous life. And he, in 2012, he's at one of our events in Malibu, California. It's pouring rain. I go stand under the tent. He walks over and we start talking. I meet him. He says to me, this is a sport. And I always, I had that narrative. I talked about it being a sport, but he really saw what somebody probably saw in the early days in running or Ironman or whatever.
Yep.
And he quit. He quit doing the cycling, and he literally, he's our head of sport. And he shows up and he makes this whole thing happen. So it was not top of mind for me. Survival was top of mind, as you say.
Right.
And to look back and see, but really, It was like an aha moment when Faye said to me, this September, I'm eating pizza. I said, we got to do something for these athletes.
Yeah. So during this whole growing the Spartan brand and creating a sport, you're not just creating an event series, you're creating a sport that hopefully will one day be in the Olympics and the Paralympics. That's where this is going. Obstacle course racing and Spartan is leading the way in that direction. What was the lowest point for you where you felt like, oh, my God, I don't know if I can pay these bills. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make this.
In those early days, those first few years, basically mortgaged the house. It was every dollar I had saved my whole life was going into this thing. And you're questioning yourself. You know, it's easy to look back now and have 20/20 vision and say, thank God I did that. But at the time, I didn't think we'd make it here, right? It was a risk. So those were low points, not being able to pay the bills, and so it just goes to show you. I mean, a lot of luck, right? A lot of hard work, and then just stick to it.
So, back to the Iceland thing for a second. Talk me through each of these laps. Is it? And one, I'm imagining it's not balmy out there. It's got to be freaking freezing. And what type of course are they running?
You know, it was for the athletes. It was really lucky. For me, it was unlucky. The weather was actually pretty good, and it was about a 6.6 mile course, and it went straight up a mountain, down the other side, and around. Epic beauty. It kind of looked like you were running on the moon, if you could imagine.
Yeah.
It was dark for most of 24 hours. It's dark. Hang on, I got to put my seatbelt on. And there were like, 25 plus obstacles out there on each loop. So you're talking about, for somebody to do 100 miles, they're going to do like 400 obstacles. They're climbing over walls. They're crawling on the barbed wire. They're throwing a spear. All the standard Spartan obstacles. And like you said, it's cold, but if you're running and you're moving,
you're okay.
It's not bad. But the wind was brutal. The wind was brutal. But last year was very, very icy. And like I said, this year, when the sun does come out, which is a very short moment of time, it was actually sunny, which was great.
So now we're talking Spartan Trail. That's going to be a new initiative in 2019, I think, kicking off in Seattle, April 14th. Talk a little bit about this. It's almost, when you're talking trail running, we're going to see obstacles, we're going to see major elevation gain, or is the play here trying to get new people in the Spartan world?
Yeah, you know, you and I know each other a long time, and I've been putting on trail races for 18 plus years. And they're not money makers. I mean, it's really it's a passion project.
Right.
Even North Face, I love their races. I go out there. I see my buddy Nick, who's a race director. There's not a ton of people that attend those events, so we're not looking at this saying, "Oh, we're gonna make a bunch of income." But whenever I make a decision, a business decision, I always go back to that core mission statement, which is I want to change 100 million lives. And so there's just going to be a giant segment of the population that'll never come out and do an obstacle race. But maybe I can get them to walk and hike a trail that's a beautiful trail up and down a mountain in the woods. And so why not do it, right? We already have 275 events. If in the epic locations around the world, we can add a beautiful trail series and I get another 100 or 1,000 or 10,000, whatever the number is, people healthy and off the couch, then I get a free pass to heaven.
So will these events be part of existing Spartan events, or will they be standalone?
I think for now, we're going to use, I mean, we go in and we rent, you know, 500 acres.
Right.
In really epic locations. So in the right locations, I think we'll have the trail events coexist there,
mm-hmm.
because then the festival area it'll be really fun for the trail runners, right? Because you're coming back and there's 7,000 people in the festival area. That's a fun experience. So I think that's what we'll do. And then eventually we'll have some standalone events, but I'm not counting on that too soon because, you and I both know putting on trail races is a tough business. Financially.
Yeah. Listen, I own the Muddy Buddy series. And the funniest part was we were part of the whole rock and roll. And I remember the rock and roll guy saying to me, listen, we make more money from the photography at Vegas than we do from your whole Muddy Buddy series. It was up to 18 events at that time. But it was, you know, again, off-road, fire road, got new people in. That's exactly what you're doing. You got to have a feeder system. If you didn't have Sprint and Olympic triathlons, you don't have Ironman guys. So you need, you know, not that you need, because you've got millions of people participating already, but having something to get people out there to try to push themselves a little bit, that leads to the next step.
That's exactly right.
So, Joe, as a event guy, you're always having to reinvent yourself because there's always new events out there. It goes from, you know, Color Run to all sorts of different things out there. How have you stayed relevant? How do you continue to take Spartan to another level so that, you know, so people are like, okay, I've done it before, but I want to keep doing it?
Well, we're really lucky, right? Because we've got a brand that's 2,800 years old, and it somehow has remained relevant.
Good point. Yeah.
So we're really lucky with the name. I think when I look at what has been successful out there, certainly Ironman, triathlon, the big major marathons, it's around sport. And so as long as we remain authentic and legitimate, and it's athletic, and it's a sport, and we're marching towards the Olympics, I think we're going to be fine. But, you know, it's going to require things like putting a million-dollar purse out there and creating a stable of athletes and doing things like trail. And we've got to get populations off the couch. And so as long as we continue to do that, we'll migrate them over. They'll get a taste. I mean, nobody knows like you know. They'll get a taste of this, and then they're hooked.
Exactly. Once you put a number on, you're in for life. It changes your life. For you, when you go out to these races, obviously you're going out and you're seeing the elite guys at the front. But there's also, you know, you guys have been really good with amputee athletes, with wheelchair bound athletes. People are out there participating in Spartan. What do you gain from that when you see somebody? You see a lot of people in our society who don't do anything, and then you see somebody who's missing a leg going, climbing a rope or getting through the, jumping over fire. How does that move you when you go out to the race and still see how the Spartan brand, the Spartan events change lives?
I mean, it's game changing for me to get an email from somebody or just physically see somebody get out there and transform.
Yeah.
Because owning a business is tough. I mean, it sucks. Right? It's just nonstop work. But to get that reward of transforming somebody,
yeah,
it makes it all worth it.
How do you have to evolve Spartan moving forward? In terms of, do you need to change courses? Obviously, you're adding trail. But in terms of the Spartan obstacle races themselves, do they need to change in some way, shape, or form?
I don't think so. I think we'll always be iterating obstacles. And making some tweaks and changes here and there, but I think we've done a good job. I think we've established ourselves as a legit sport that people enjoy. It's hard for people to go out and buy a $5,000 bike and participate in Ironman.
Yep.
Not everybody wants to run 26.2 miles. So I think we've carved out a niche where it's like hard, but it's fun, and it's repeatable. So I'm excited. I think we're here to stay.
So when I look at the most successful brands from a financial perspective, obviously Rock and Roll and Ironman, and one of the reasons they're successful is Heads and Beds. They know you come into a city and 20,000 people come and they stay in hotels. Your events can you quantify that in terms of Spartan brings X number of people to town and they do this many hotel nights? Are you able to get some funding up front from venues because you're filling up hotels?
Well, we bring about $4 million of economic impact when we come into a town.
Wow.
And that number goes up if it's a bigger event. So Iceland is a very big number, for example, because as you can imagine, people stay in Iceland for more than a day. And we just haven't, you know, it took Ironman a long time to be able to get economic benefit from those cities and towns. It's just starting to scratch the surface for us. But you're absolutely right. We need it for our long-term success.
Yeah, because that really is what separates other, when you talk about Boston Marathon, New York Marathon, those things are great, but they're one-offs. When you're talking about creating a series, you have to show that impact for the cities to go, okay, we just had a triathlon out here, La Quinta, it was an Ironman 70.3. I think the cities out there put up 180K for 5 years for them to bring the event there. Well, that's good dollars. And then they become a partner. Then they help you with every need. Now, the positive for you guys is you're not blocking off roads. So you're not dealing with a lot of those things, but still getting money from these cities would be a huge benefit for Spartan.
Would be a huge benefit. It's something something we're looking at, and we've got the economic impact studies to show what we do to a city or town, but it's still tough going.
Love it. Hey, Joe, I know you've got a lot of other stuff going on. I appreciate your time. And so for just Spartan.com, you can sign up for any of the, it looks like there's, what, 10 to 12 this year in terms of trail runs?
Yeah, and it may, and that may grow. We've got the leadership series. If there's anybody out there listening that is a leader in business, trying to get a team motivated, we do those at our stadium events, which are a lot of fun to come out to and listen to some real inspirational speakers. We've obviously got the books out there. And if anybody wants to reach out, I give my email to the public. So it's joe@spartan.com. Happy to help anybody, especially veterans and kids. If you don't have the money, you want to get out there and race, I'm happy to give you an entry. So, thanks, Bob. You're awesome.
Joe, always a pleasure, man. Thanks so much for taking so much time, and congratulations on everything you're doing. If you want to try a new Spartan Trail event, again, Spartan.com for all the information. Joe DeSena has built this thing from ground zero and has built one of the most amazing brands on the planet. Joe, as always, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, sir.
All right. Joe DeSena has been our guest. Again, we're brought to you by Tough Man Try, Velofix.com, Polar Blood, Sweat, and Data, and USA-SwimRun.com, Challenge Athletes Foundation, Babbittville.com. Hold on, everybody. We will be right back.